And welcome in. This is the 260 Dugout Podcast. I am your host, DC Hendricks. Before we get started, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Apple, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are available. Make us one of your favorites by subscribing to keep up with this podcast, as this is the last three episodes that we got coming up for you guys this season, and we will be taking a hiatus until season three. The season has been absolutely fantastic, and I can't thank everyone enough. But as always, I love to give the special shout out to the sponsors as we start, of course, McMahon's Best One Auto, Old Ford Baseball Company, and as of a couple weeks ago, McRae, pitching dev, Mad Apple Baseball, for joining the podcast as well. So very excited for this week's episode, as you know, I always love learning things. You know, baseball is a game that you learn so much each and every day, whether you're playing, whether you're talking about it. There's always new things to learn, especially, you know, when it comes to Fort Wayne baseball. There's so much to learn. I'm only 35, 36 years old in a couple of days. So a lot of baseball happened long before I was even thought of, long before my parents were even thought of. But luckily, we have people like Chad Gramling, who is joining the show today, who dig into the history of Fort Wayne baseball and educate people like myself, people like you listening, about Fort Wayne baseball. Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you, DC. It's a pleasure. Excited to be here.
I would argue the same for me. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time. I checked my mailbox a couple of months ago, and I have this fantastic book called And I gotta give you props on this, because the cover is instantly drawing in, and I know nobody can see it, but I love, now I'll let you describe the picture on it, but it's, the book is called Baseball in Fort Wayne, Images of Baseball, and it's, you know, put together by Chad Gramling, who is joining the show today. Chad, go ahead and walk us through the picture that you chose, because there's so many to go through in history. What picture did you choose to grace this cover of your book, and why?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I will say that Baseball in Fort Wayne was my first opportunity to do a book, and I worked with publisher Arcadia Publishing. And they have some guidelines, some templates you're supposed to follow, and create the cover art. So you really have a few different options. The great thing about it is you know, one of the picture on the front has to be on the cover, or has to be, yeah, obviously has to be on the cover, has to be in the book. And so they kind of give you three or four different options. And I thought to myself, boy, I hope this one is on the cover. And lo and behold, that was one of the options that they presented to me. And, I thought, gosh, this is just the perfect representation. It's a nice throwback, I believe it was when the our semi pros were in Japan playing in the Global World Series, and has runner sliding into home, and sorry that the player's name is lost in my head at the moment, but I believe that's in the inside cover if you want to look it up. But It has him sliding into home, and obviously safe. You can just feel the excitement of that moment, and just really represents Fort Wayne well. It's Fort Wayne baseball is more than just happening in Fort Wayne. It has global ramifications, not even just national, but you know, we did have players that went overseas, over and into Japan, and they played in Global World Series. To just think about that, and it's a nice bridge from our history into the present. So, was really excited by that.
Yeah, definitely a great way to start things off. And you know, I wanted to, you know, as I've talked to a couple authors now of books that cover the history of Fort Wayne, I do want to know your baseball background. You know, did you grow up playing, and when did you fall in love with the game? Because I imagine you got a deep love for baseball if you were able to put all this together for us.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting story. I played T-ball. I played Little League baseball. Fell in love with baseball really around the 1984 era, when the Cubs and the Padres were in the playoffs, and it just, the excitement of that, and the Cubs having the, being right on the cusp of going further, and broke my heart when the Padres beat them. Even was tough for me to accept that the Tin Caps had become the Wizards had become a Padres affiliate back in the day. But I finally, I've kind of set that to rest. And
a lot of Tin Caps fans would agree with you today that since they love trading our best players every year. So
yeah, that's the nature of the business. Yeah, it is the nature of the business. definitely. But that was really my first introduction into baseball as a youth. Played T-ball, Little League, right up into where they had players pitching. So it just went from machine league to players pitching. Unfortunately, it was about that point I realized I'm probably a better fan and spectator than I am a player. I still contend, I hit one home run in Little League, and I still contend it was an accident. I was using a bat that I wasn't familiar with, really had no business. I didn't know what I was doing. It happened, and I still feel like that's one of my great pieces of glory. But I did learn a lot through playing baseball, through things coaches taught me, through things that I learned from my fellow teammates, things like that. And I kind of distanced myself from baseball a little bit after that. Always collected baseball cards as a kid. I can even owe a lot of my career in business intelligence today to some of the things I, sorting baseball cards, some of those sorts of things. But later on, I kind of got the bug again. I was like, gosh, I still really like baseball, and I still really just kind of longed to be around it, to be near it, and even wished I still had this. I wish I had skills to play. And I'll never forget when I told my dad I wasn't going to go on to the next level of baseball. I could see disappointment, and he did say, hey, Chad, once you get out, it's really hard to get back in. I didn't necessarily understand that at the time. And I shared this, when Northeast Indiana Baseball Association honored me with the Bob Parker Award. Congratulations to you as well. I believe we're kindred there, well-deserved. I had this opportunity to write baseball in Fort Wayne. And at the time, that was kind of like my lifelong dream, was to write a book, be able to go into a store, see my name on the cover. This was before ebooks had taken over the world, and digital had taken over the world. And still to this day, it's so gratifying to go in and see my name on the cover. But what that opportunity did for me, and I shared this with the Baseball Association, was I found a way back in. And that really from there kind of just propelled a continual, productive and progressive love for the history of the game, history of the sport, and the connections to our community. So it's a long-winded answer to your question, but that's my story.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, so I assume that you grew up in Fort Wayne?
I grew up, still live in Auburn, a little bit north of Fort Wayne, work in Fort Wayne. I consider Northeast Indiana to really be my community. Mm-hmm. When we did baseball in Fort Wayne, it wasn't just Fort Wayne. We wanted to make sure it encompassed players and history and information from really all of Northeast Indiana. So. There's a lot of players, and you'll see, even as you're reading through the narratives in the book, I think everybody realized Northeast Indiana is the community.
Oh, for sure. And then once you get back in too, you're welcome back in. It's almost like a fraternity, with baseball hits in the area. And so I guess I'm just trying to, kind of get in your process of, so how did you approach, once you got the idea and the bug that you mm-hmm. wanted to get back in, and this idea of baseball in Fort Wayne got in your head?
Yeah.
What were your goals, and what story were you trying to tell?
Yeah. the opportunity to write the book and really came about almost by accident. I hate to say it fell in my lap, but it kind of did. And I won't belabor all the details, but essentially, I was very fortunate through some of my network to have this opportunity. And I was sort of coached on how to fill out the book proposal. And before I knew it, I had a contract that literally said, you got 4 months to get this baby done. And I really only had periphery research and didn't even know what I didn't know at that point. So it was it's like, wow, I have got to make more connections. I've got to talk to more people. I've got to figure out more of the history and really help understand what the narrative is so I can tell the narrative. And I knew, hey, baseball, professional organized baseball started in Fort Wayne, with the first game in 1871. Okay, I know that. I know about the Wizards. What's all that stuff in between? And so that's really what I set out, is to understand the stuff in between. Learned a lot about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League and the connection to League of Their Own. Got to learn about the Federation League. I got to learn about a lot of these other things. Even some of the semi-pro teams and just a lot of that sort of thing. At the time, even some of the girls' league, it was lacking in information. A lot of other sources, colored baseball really was lacking in information. And in the book, I'll be just straight up. That's one of the things that's truly lacking in that book, is because I, at the time, thinking back, it's 2007, so I was writing the book in 2006. We didn't have a lot of Saber representation. We didn't have a lot of historians and the technology and ability to research like we do today was lacking. So, really the girls' league, getting the photos and the rights to the photos was a challenge. Getting some of the information on Negro League baseball was a challenge. But I wanted to make sure it was represented. And so it was something I really tried to force through and get information about. Unfortunately, sometimes when you do that, it does teeter on misrepresentation. And yeah, some things in the book are not totally accurate. As I think in the book, I even assert that the first game was played in a spot that it wasn't. We later have since then identified where the first game was played, and there's a memorial there now. And someday I'd love to go back and make those corrections. But really back to your question, DC, is what I wanted to do is really tell that full narrative from really the Civil War era to what ultimately became the second to last season of the Fort Wayne Wizards at the Castle at Memorial Stadium. Really wanted to just kind of make sure that community, baseball lovers, anybody that had any sort of admiration really could understand in Northeast Indiana, there's a whole lot of history beyond just what we know today. And I've since kind of made it a little bit of my mission to, I want to honor the folks that have helped create the history and the lineage and the legacy of the things in our community. Baseball is definitely a community of its own. And there's a lot of people that did a lot of remarkable things and have great stories that deserve to be told. And that's really what I set out to do. I do believe that some of that was achieved. Again, another long-winded answer. Apologies.
It's okay. I would agree that I thought, there was some great stories that were being told. And you mentioned a couple of things, like the ties with the League of Their Own. Mm-hmm. That's one that always resonated with me, looking back as, a good buddy of mine, Logan Weenie, of a baseball company, does a lot of supporting with them and, in the history of baseball, and talks a lot about the connection there. Yeah. Talk about that story a little bit for the listeners in case they don't, they aren't aware of the connection of Fort Wayne and A League of Their Own.
Sure. Yeah. A League of Their Own is, again, it's goes back to the World War II era, where there was concerns that in the baseball business realm that with the men overseas fighting, and there might be issues with attendance at baseball games, and what if we have to not play games? And so Philip Wrigley and some others decided, William Wrigley and some others decided, hey, let's see if we can get a girls' league started. There were tryouts in a lot of communities. Fort Wayne was one of those where there were some tryouts. Those tryouts then actually even went to Wrigley Field. I got a chance. Didn't include her in baseball in Fort Wayne because she wasn't on my radar at the time, but Janie Crick. She was an Auburn native, later lived in Fort Wayne. She relayed a story to me about, you know, she was playing in a boys baseball team in Auburn at the time. And somehow she got the attention of a scout. And next thing she knew, she was at tryouts in Wrigley Field. And she wasn't on my radar at the time because she never played with the Daisies. She played with a couple other teams in the league, but not the Daisies. And Fort Wayne Daisies were a team. They weren't in the inaugural season of the league. I believe they were Minneapolis in the inaugural season. But then the second year, they relocated to Fort Wayne and became the Fort Wayne Daisies. Helen Callahan, who was a player on that team, her sons later went on to, Casey Candale went on to play for the Montreal Expos. Her other son, Kelly Candale, was involved in doing a documentary. In fact, he was the lone producer and documentarian of a reunion that took place in Fort Wayne. During the Women's League Run Jane Run event, that was produced and put onto PBS and caught the attention of director I'm trying to remember her name now. She was Laverne on Laverne and Shirley. I always forget her name, but she saw the documentary and my age is catching up with me, DC. I'm starting to forget names more and more, and that's distressing, but especially for somebody that prides themselves on historic information. But that caught the attention. It became a big league movie It became a Hollywood production. Yep. Kelly Candale was brought in to consult. I did have some email correspondence with him back in the day when I was working on the book. He never confirmed that any of the movie was directly based on Fort Wayne, events and teams, but did say it definitely was influenced. And there's a lot of things you can trace back to the Fort Wayne Daisies from that movie. And so it's always fun to kind of just reminisce and think about. And one of the things I love, I was talking to Janie before she passed away, and she told me the story. You know, at the end of the movie in the credits, when one of the gals slides into the base and the umpire calls her out, she gets up and starts arguing with the umpire. That's Janie Crick. That's our legendary local. She told me at the time. They were all packed, ready to go to the airport to go home. And somebody said, hey, Janie, they want to do some B-roll footage. Would you be willing to do the slide and argue with the umpire? And she didn't even have to do it twice. She's like, absolutely. And I love to tell that story because that's one of my favorite scenes of the movie. But it is a great scene.
It is. It is. Yeah, absolutely. And so that was one of my favorite parts of the book. And then another part too, admittedly, like I said, with my age, I don't have a whole lot of knowledge of, you know, teams like the Kikiangas
and
that history. And I wanted you to highlight a little bit of that as well, because we don't want to give too much away, because we want people to get the book
in case they haven't.
But can you talk about the chapter on the Kikiangas?
Yeah. I mean, the Kikiangas is kind of a fascinating story in baseball history. Around the time that they were forming the National Association, you know, there was Fort Wayne wanted to get in on the game, and no pun intended, I guess, but they wanted to get in. And so they, like many communities throughout the country, there was a lot of men who played sandlot baseball, and there were clubs, and they would, you know, play together, and there would be games. But once it started turning into something where it might become a professional game, they put in the application to have a team, and they were fortunate enough to have a team. Interestingly, and this is where it starts to border a little bit on lore versus fact. What was said to be that there was a team from Baltimore that was doing some barnstorming tours, and their vehicle broke down, and they had to stay in the area, so they ended up on the Kikiangas. How much of that is fact and fiction is debatable, but what is known is, yeah, they did end up on the Kikiangas. And so there was this blended team of you know, local Northeast Indiana, Fort Wayne talent with some almost ringers from the Baltimore area. And the first game of that National Association was set to be played elsewhere, I think in New York, if memory serves right. But there was a rainout, and the baseball gods decided Fort Wayne will be the location of the first professional baseball game, first organized league professional baseball game. And it was between Fort Wayne Kikiangas and the Cleveland Forest Cities. And pitching for Fort Wayne that day was Hall of Famer Bobby Matthews. So inventor of the curveball is at least largely credited to it. And it was a surprisingly low-scoring contest. You know, at the time, it wasn't unusual to see scores in the teens and 20s and 30s. And this one, I believe it was a shutout. I'm trying to remember the score, if it was 3-0, 5-0, something like that. But it was a very low-scoring affair, and it ended up being rain-shortened. But it was long enough to count. And so Fort Wayne had the privilege of and the honor of winning the first organized professional baseball game. The team itself didn't fare so well, said to be plagued by some of the Baltimore players being homesick. There was even speculation of game fixes and, you know, rough league on the buses, and getting chased out of visiting stadiums, things of that. And so the team folded before the season even finished. But for that brief glimpse of time, there they were.
The Kikiangas running it. Yeah, it's so just to give everyone a you know, I guess not really a synopsis, but basically the way I would summarize the book, you know, that Chad has put together for us and did back in 2007. It's basically, I think it was 128 pages.
Roughly, that sounds about right. 128 pages. Close to 200 photos, close to 200 pages, many, many narratives and chapter intros.
Yeah, more than 135 years of Fort Wayne, Northeast Indiana's baseball heritage, tracing all the way back from the 1871 Kikiangas all the way to what was formerly known as Fort Wayne Wizards, because they weren't the Tin Caps yet when this book was published.
Parkview Field wasn't even announced by that
time. Not even announced. So I did want to talk about some of the players. You know, when we talk Fort Wayne history and Fort Wayne baseball, You know, we always talk about some of the all-time greats and living legends. Mm-hmm. And you did have a small portion in the book about some of the, you know, local legends, sure, so to speak. Before we kind of, you know, tell everyone where they can grab this at, that's another part I wanted to highlight with you as well. Can you talk about that part of the book where you were, you know, where you dug into some of the local legends from Northeast Indiana?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I love to talk about. And first name off my tongue whenever people ask about the legends and the famous people is Chick Stahl. Chick Stahl, mainly because it's a fascinating story, fascinating tale. Might have been able to go down as one of the all-time great players in the history of baseball. But he unfortunately, he rose to fame, rose to become manager of the Boston team in spring training for whatever reason. And there's a lot of mystery and intrigue around it. He drank carbolic acid and took his own life. Tragic. And there's all sorts of other sorts of mystery and intrigue and that follows that. Definitely would encourage people to research that and understand that and know that history. But he was a wonderful baseball player, great player. Today we call him five-tool players. He definitely would be that. He was, some of the other players that really stand out to me, one of my favorites is Raleigh Zeider. He's an interesting character in and of itself, not just in the game, but he played in the early 1900s. I've done a lot of research on him. I got to meet some of his descendants even. He played with all of the Chicago teams, the Cubs, the White Sox, as well as the short-lived Chicago Whales of the Federation League of,
yep,
or the Federal League. A lot of great stories around him. He was a very smart player, was even shortly, he had a short stint with the Highlanders, who are the modern day Yankees. He was even the captain of the team at the time. He was captain of the White Sox during his rookie season. Had set the rookie stolen base record that stood from, I believe it was 1909 or 1910 all the way to 1986. He definitely another one that I always encourage people to learn about. A lot of great stories there. Even after he finished playing, he had some local accomplishments and lore there. Some of the other ones that stand out to me, I didn't get a book, a picture or representation of him in the book, Ned Garver. I'll be very transparent and share that I had him all slated. And when I got to putting it into the layout, the picture didn't scan in properly. And so I couldn't include it in the book.
Yeah.
That's one that disappoints me. Some of the others though, Max Carey, he's got a great story. Bill Wamsgans, a very similar story. Bill Wamsgans is to this day the only unassisted triple play in World Series history. Max Carey, both Wamsgans and Max Carey were studying at Concordia, to become pastors. Baseball had other plans. Another one that stands out, probably not as well known in the baseball world, but definitely in other arenas, is Billy Sunday. Another player that probably was right up there with the best in the business at the time, and he just walked away from baseball and became a evangelist. Definitely a lot of information to learn there. A lot of standouts, and this doesn't even start to get into some of our wizards that went on to be big leaguers, like Torrey Hunter and Jake Peavy and LaTroy Hawkins. I still say, if you go back and look at those early seasons of the Wizards and just look at some of those players that came up into the Twins system and beyond, it's remarkable.
Oh, yeah. I remember as a youngster, we used to go, I went to Wayndale Elementary, and we would go to Wizards games. I think it was only one game a year, but it was like a reading program where the Wizards would invite us out, and we get to go to a game for free. So I was a youngster, but I do remember seeing Torrey Hunter, and then eventually seeing him later on as an all-star for the Twins. So I do have some memories with the Wizards, but we had a lot of talent on the Wizards.
Yep. Sure did. And you know, those are the fun ones for me to watch and learn about. And we're to that point now. I think all the Wizards are through their careers. And so it's all tin caps now. Definitely have had a lot of tin caps go on as well. So it's always neat to I think what they say from the 260 to the show.
That's right. That's the thing. Originally that's what I wanted to call this podcast, but the tin caps, they say that a lot. So I was like, nah, I really don't want to, can't go there. So
nothing against the tin caps, but you don't want to create the confusion, right?
Yeah. We don't want to confuse people. So I was trying to think of something good, and my good buddy of mine, Logan Weening, we put our heads together and came up with the 260 dugout instead of 260 to the show. Plus we don't, you know, I feel like that name, it just means 260 to the pros is what that means.
It does. And it does. It's a great name. Great name. So,
yeah. So, and plus, like, we talk a lot of history and high school on here.
Yeah.
A little more so than professionally. So,
yeah. Very much so.
But you did a great job. That's why I wanted to highlight that. You did a great job going from 1871 all the way to the Wizards. Just to brief before we, you know, promote where everybody can get it, just talk about from your perspective what, you know, growing up watching the Wizards and having minor league baseball guys that, you know, we grew up watching and at the professional level, what did it mean to you being able, because, you know, I always like to ask people just that were able to remember, you know, watching these guys. That's probably the nicest way of bringing up
all the old.
Probably the nicest way to say that. But for you, what did it mean, you know, being able to watch the Wizards and that history unfolding right in our city?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know anybody's ever asked me that, DC. So it's thinking back to talking to my grandparents, especially my grandmother. She used to talk to me about when she could come down to Fort Wayne to the Coliseum and watch the Pistons play. And I used to think to myself, gosh, it would be neat to be able to watch teams that I could follow and to it just actually have a connection to, especially in a sport that I love. And so most of my life into my early through my childhood and into my teens, we didn't have professional baseball. And then I remember when the Wizards were announced to come to Fort Wayne. I thought, gosh, this is great. I finally get to watch professionals. Didn't matter to me that it was minor league. And I'll be candid. I didn't get to even go to a major league game until I was into my 20s. So for me, minor league baseball was that was my opportunity to actually watch professional baseball, and it was neat to have that connection and know someday some of these players will go on to play in the pros. So it was, you know, it's, you kind of have that link or that touch to greatness, so to speak. And so that was neat. The staff at, you know, whether it was Wizards or today's Tin Caps, that organization has always been fabulous. The folks that run that, and you know, Mike Nutter's the mainstay there. And some others, you know, I can't speak highly enough. In fact, you know, Mike was phenomenal when I was doing the book. He had boxes of photographs that he basically just gave me access to go through and help identify some of the players and. Man, and then talking to him about stories of some of those players, it was phenomenal. So to be able to then to start piecing that together with the history of what I remembered, and even then I was taking some photographs of then players that were Wizards, you know, like Sean Burroughs and some of the others. It's like, was really neat to just kind of be a contributor on a small scale to that. And for a time, I even kept my own blog going that, you know, I would continue to do a little bit of what you're doing today, DC, of just documenting the history and having a connection and a piece. And that's why I say when I found my way back in, that was it. And, you know, to me, it's funny, and I'll share this. You've mentioned Logan a couple of times too. Do you know our history at all?
No.
Okay. This is where I find it's so funny because I recently just dug it up. But you know, back when I was running that blog, and after the book had come out, a few years after the book, I get this email from I think it was an eighth grader who wanted help with a research paper on Fort Wayne baseball teams, and I recently took a screenshot of it and sent it to him, and it was Logan. To me, it was like, gosh, you just think about how all that comes full circle. And today he's doing what he's doing with Old Fort Baseball Company. And it's just amazing. I love to watch it. I wear the shirts proudly. You know, I wear all the merch proudly for that matter. And it's really neat because, you know, when I was doing the book, I had people like Jim Shovlin who were just wonderful resources, and I couldn't have done it without him. You know, people like Jim and Mike and Don Graham and a host of others that were, you know, Tim Kindler was another one. You know, Tim Tassler, got to know him after the book, you know, and today we're sort of comrades in the Sabre world and get to share information and stories and continue to document that history and dig up those gems, those diamond gems, so to speak, and talk about, you know, making sure that it's here for future generations. So, and then to think there's Logan who's also, and people like you too, DC, you're carrying the torch, you know? And so that's, to me, that was a little bit of what I had hoped to see happen through baseball in Fort Wayne. Not going to say that is the whole reason, but definitely, you know, the excitement that came with Parkview Field and what the Tin Caps have done. And to me, it just tells a wonderful story. And again, goes back to community, you know, and honoring those legends that came before us.
I couldn't agree more. And you did a great job with this book. So I purposely wanted to save a lot of the, like, you know, close and minute details because I want people to get the book. So for everybody that, you know, is obviously interested, which I'm sure they are after we've, you know, teased all the good stuff, the pictures within the book, where can they grab Baseball in Fort Wayne?
Yeah, it's the book is available online, obviously, just like about any book. You can go to Amazon, you can go to Barnes & Noble, you can go direct to the publisher at Arcadia Publishing, Books a Million. But I also want to make sure that, you know, it can be purchased in person at our retailers, our brick and mortar retailers. You know, I think Walgreens carries it in most Walgreens, CVS does, some of the other specialty retailers like that that carry local history books. Barnes & Noble carries it. If you're in the Auburn area, I encourage you to stop by the Auburn Court Duesenberg Museum. It's in their gift shop. And some of the other local bookstores that are still around definitely carry it. So with it being through a regional history publisher, Arcadia does a wonderful job of making sure that it does get out and about to some of those local retailers. So I would encourage you to look for that. Usually there's a display rack, like a carousel display that has three or four tiers of books that you spin and you can see right there. Definitely would encourage you to visit those retailers and purchase it in person if you can.
I love it. Chad, thank you so much for coming on today and giving us a nice little synopsis of your fantastic book here. And, you know, keep up the great work. Let's get this book in more hands.
All right. Sounds great. I like that.
Thanks, Chad.
Thank you. Have a good one.